Hey everybody, welcome to a hot and sticky Friday filibuster. Friday filibuster, hot and sticky. What was that state sketch? Hot pursuits, yes. Pursuits. So yeah, so this is the hot version of Operation Hot Filibuster, and we're here to bring you the same old crap. So we got Daryl Loomis here.
Hello.
Eric Astroslager.
Hi there.
And Mac McIntyre.
Hack-a-do.
And Mac, I'm going to save you for last because I figure we have stuff in common to talk about at the end.
Okay.
So let's go to Daryl, what you've been up to.
Not a whole lot of new stuff. Not that I haven't been reviewing for the site. The only interesting thing is I've been going back. I went back in time and started replaying the original Fallout a few days back.
The original?
Whoa. Yeah. It had been a long time. I liked it, you know, when it came out in 97 or 98. So, you know, it's rudimentary role-playing game stuff, but, it's definitely an adult, it's the same kind of adult video game that I remember that few video games are today. So, it's fun, it's interesting, for me. But that's probably about it.
Wow, alright, fascinating. Delivering that was, you know, we haven't really hit the Fallout audience so much in this podcast, so I think you gave us a demographic we've been chasing for a while.
There you go, absolutely.
Nice. Eric, how about you?
I think it's time for a little old news with Eric Astroslager.
Yes, please.
As it always was.
Can you get older than the original Fallout?
That's I can't. Unfortunately, I cannot. A couple of TV shows that I am revisiting / giving a second chance. With the passing of James Gandolfini last month, I decided I want to go back and start watching Sopranos again, because I watched the first season. I think I might have watched the second season as well, like back in like 2001 or two. And I liked it okay, but I think I kind of wasn't ready for a TV show with an unlikable protagonist. This is sort of the realization I've come to, because I found it very hard to watch and very kind of unlikable and just really aggressive and, you know, off-putting. But now it's just like, oh, it's just a TV show that's kind of good. I think watching Breaking Bad has certainly you know, taken down my defenses in that regard. It's kind of amazing how far we've come in the past like 10 years as far as the anti-hero in TV. Because I feel like at the time I watched Sopranos, the only serialized show I was probably watching on a regular basis was something like 24, you know, which is a very different kind of show. You know, there weren't a whole lot, at least on network television, and I didn't have HBO. So
although you have to wonder, I mean, I remember feeling like those were the days of Jack Bauer executing prisoners and hacking their heads off with hacksaws, you know?
Yeah, they're still,
it's still kind of justified behavior. It's like justified, you know, he had to do it because he had to save the city from the nuclear bomb. You know, Tony Soprano's kills a guy because he, you know, looks at him wrong or whatever. It's a different kind of show.
Well, what I think's interesting about that is that, you know, it's true that probably the Sopranos, at least in the modern era that I can think of, is the first one that did that. But, I mean, we've been working with that in movies for a couple of generations. I mean,
oh yeah, for sure.
Martin Scorsese's made his made all of his money off of those, that same kind of anti-hero, but people were shocked when it came onto TV, and that's kind of strange to me.
It's I mean, it's certainly different spending 2 hours with, or you know, 2.5 hours with a character like that, and then spending, you know, 13 episodes and then going right into the next season. It's just it got very kind of I don't know, it got very kind of oppressive. But I'm really enjoying it now. I finished the first season. You know, stuff I'd already seen, but it'd been a while. I liked it a lot, and I'm about to start season two. And the other show that I'm giving a second chance, and one we've had, you know, sharp words about on this program before, fairly or unfairly, is I've gone back and watched the first couple seasons of 30 Rock again.
Mm-hmm.
While we were on our vacation, the wife and I got Tina Fey's audiobook out of the library, and we were listening to it. And
A good book.
Very funny, very personable. You know, I think you know, whatever. I don't know. I don't know what to say, whatever you think of Tina Fey, because none of us know her, but whatever you think of her humor, I think she comes across as very, you know, personable and funny in the book. And it wanted me to, you know, maybe want to go back and give 30 Rock another chance, because I did like the second season, third season.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think going back, I think, you know, it is a very good show. I'm not like laughing, gut laughing, but, you know, it does a lot of interesting things. And I think, a lot of our complaints about the show, at least a lot of my complaints about the show, we're at a time when we did not have this past year of NBC television to compare it to. So I think, you know, there were better shows that I could point to and say, well, it's not as good as this, but, you know, compared to some of the lackluster TV we've been looking at, I think it holds up pretty well. So
I quite like the show. It's got a lot of the things that I like about, you know, it's got a lot of the absurdities that I like in comedy and non sequiturs and stuff like that. And, you know, honestly, I mean, it keeps going. It gets worse and worse as the, you know, as far as that stuff goes, as the series rolls on. But so I think, honestly, where people were most complaining about it, I was probably laughing the hardest. So I'm a big fan. I like Tina Fey a lot. I like Tracy Morgan a lot. I like that Alec Baldwin's found his, you know, kind of inner Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch it kind of apart from all of the like annoying Emmy wins and all the kind of stuff that kind of like a negative, they're gonna have backlash that will fair or not be built up around the show. So so that's what I've been doing.
All right, nice. Okay, Mac, we got a little filibuster cinematic review to unleash, correct?
That's right.
What do we got?
Last weekend we went and saw Pacific Rim.
Pacific Rim. Yeah. Yes. All the ingredients, Mac, of just being big time, fun. You had giant robots, you had giant monsters, Guillermo del Toro, you had Stringer freaking Bell, you know, you had Jax Teller. It was all in there. So, yeah, we went to go see it. And verdict?
Kind of middle of the road.
That is unfortunately what I landed on as well, yes.
Mm. It's not stellar, but not awful either.
I think, for me it was I'm trying to remember how I put it when I first talked about it, but just a ton of just all the cliches you've come to expect just wrapped up in a super shiny, you know, container. So
yeah, it's military movie cliches. You
know? Yeah, just like, yeah, absolutely.
Going on
that's
a mission and has a past, and talk about following orders versus insubordination, and having to get a new partner and work with the new partner. And,
in all those beats that you've come to expect, that you've seen in your Top Guns and whatever, you'll find them here. So there wasn't even the monster robot engagements played out like something you would see in a military movie, just giant awesome robots and giant awesome monsters. But I don't know, I'm just at the point where I just want to be surprised. I just want to see different stuff, I suppose. So while the imagination and the effects are really cool, for one thing, you didn't, even though you had a limitless budget and all these great toys to work with, the monster robot engagements were limited. They were one-on-one or two-on-one. You know, it's why not go for it and give us a full-on scale? The big finale fight, I don't know, kind of underwhelming, right, Mac?
Yeah, it's there are a few moments here and there throughout the movie where we get a glimpse of the movie it could have been instead of what we saw. There's just a little tiny bits here and there where it suddenly gets really crazy and then just goes back to just being stock action movie. And I wanted more of those really, really over-the-top moments. There's a moment where the robot's carrying a boat behind him and uses a giant boat as a weapon.
Right.
That was
probably
on the trailer, so that's not a spoiler. And there's another bit that happens underwater that has a really sort of unexpected action beat that took me by surprise. And so stuff like that where it suddenly becomes just really wild, I thought I wanted more wild and more sort of imagination. I mean, you know, everyone says, oh, well, the movie promised robots versus monsters and it delivered robots versus monsters. But I think, well, maybe it could have done even more with robots versus monsters.
Yeah, and I just keep coming back to, I just wish they changed up the formula a bit. You know, you know who the pilot who's going to come in and drive the robot in a pinch is going to be. You know how – you just know how the beats – I guarantee you guys will map out exactly how the beats happen, you know. So just cool effects, cool concept. The world was interesting. And the other problem I had was the action climax in the middle of the movie, right? There was a great – so there's a really cool fight scene in the middle, but it never outdoes that. So it's – you're kind of on the – you're going downhill after that. So that's kind of a bummer. So.
Now, I was thinking about it, and I was reminded of the Green Lantern movie.
I've completely forgotten that movie. So.
Because with that movie, you know, they go down the checklist of, okay, here's everything you want to see in a Green Lantern movie.
Yeah, that's a good point. And
they just check it all off.
Or a superhero origin movie. How about that?
Yeah, and you just kind of walk away with a shrug. It's like, well, yeah, that's what I expected to see, but, you know, and then what? And, you know, there's really nothing else to hang the movie on. And I kind of felt that same way about Pacific Rim. That's, it's not bad. There's nothing necessarily wrong with it. It's just it could have been more.
Yep, that's where I am too. So yeah, unfortunate, but we'll see. We still have the Wolverine, and we've got Nick Frost and Simon Pegg coming by. So we still got some summer left. But yeah, Pacific Rim was a tentpole for me and kind of was so-so. All right, let's keep rocketing through, Mac. I don't know. Did I mention that we were gonna be aggressive with our filibuster tonight? Did I mention that too? I can't remember.
I think so. Yeah,
I got short-term memory loss because, and I will kick off this next segment of what we got coming up for our site. I'm hopelessly addicted to because the first Cinemax original series I watched, Strike Back, was just. Had some good moments, but just too over the top and just too Cinemaxy. This one, Banshee, is really cool. Not as overly gratuitous and like we are Cinemax, so we must do this. You know, so it's a cool show. It's about an ex-con who, through crazy circumstances, ended up as the fake sheriff of a small town run by a shunned Amish gangster warlord. And it is crazy, but it is really cool. I mean, it's cool. The gimmick works because so he takes on the sheriff's identity, and no one knows, you know, there's only one person who knows he's not the real sheriff, but everyone else thinks he's a real sheriff. So when he does unsheriff-like things because he's just a random guy, there's just a look on people's faces. You know, like there's a whole sequence where he confronts a mixed martial arts fighter who had assaulted a girl, and they end up in just a brutal fight. Like a brutal 10-minute fight, where our hero ends up breaking the fingers of the MMA guy, putting him in submission, and then destroying his elbow. And all these guys, like these cops, are just watching him. Like, this is our boss. And like, there's elements of that. He just kind of goes gung ho, and no one quite knows what to make of it. So I think that's a pretty cool hook. And I'm about 5 episodes in, hugely entertaining, different. I don't know. Banshee, you know, definitely recommend it. I mean, it's certainly built towards the Cinemax demographic for sure, but as far as like a follow-up series, it's got the goods. It's really entertaining. Super like grade A pulp, you know what I mean? So
interesting.
Yep, that's coming, so highly recommended. Daryl, what about you? Got anything coming?
For the site?
Yes.
A couple things. Sort of cult things that I'll just go by real fast. The first one, which I did last week, is 77 from 77 called The Incredible Melting Man.
Yes.
Rick Baker, fantastic Rick Baker effects, melty effects that are about as gross as you can get. And there are a few movies out there that come closer to recapturing, at least that, you know, in modern times, that come closer to recapturing the old 50s monster movies, and it really does the job. It's funny and stupid, and everybody is in on the joke, and it has terrible acting, and it has everything you want, including, again, some of the most disgusting Rick Baker effects that, I don't know, some of the best effects he really ever did, especially for that budget. And then also from right around that same time, it might also be 77, is the science fiction cult classic A Boy and His Dog, which I'm reviewing this week.
I just saw that recently.
For the first time?
Yeah.
What did you think?
It was odd.
It's an odd movie. It's very funny, to me at least, and has one of the best dog performances in cinema history.
Fantastic. You had me a dog performance.
So I love the movie. I hadn't seen it in years. It's a lot funnier and stranger than I remember. Great early Don Johnson role and like I said, a great dog performance. How can you go wrong?
Nice. All right, Eric, how about you? What do you got?
First off, Air Bud says hello.
Oh, true.
No, I'm kidding.
He went there.
Sorry. This week I'm reviewing the final season of Damages, a show that began on FX and switched over to, I think, the Dish Network or DirecTV. I gotta look that up before I write this review. But it's a very, talk about, you know, unlikable characters. this is kind of a show that's built on basically the idea that everyone is out for themselves and no one is basically any good and everyone is backstabbing and everyone, it's all, it's a show that where they always show what's going to happen like 3 months from now and they build up to this exciting finale that, where someone dies or something. Anyway, so this last season, I reviewed the fourth season, for the site. That had John Goodman as a military contractor, and it was okay, but it was sort of a step down from the first three. This one seems to be a little bit more focused. The guest stars in this one are Ryan Philippe, Jen Elfman is in it for a bit, some other people, and it seems all right. It's you know, I think if you stuck with the show, it's worth watching. It definitely seems like a step up from the previous season, anyway. So
nice. All right, Mac.
Yeah, I am reviewing the 2013 remake / sequel of Evil Dead.
Oh yeah,
it's
interesting. It's interesting. The concept here is that they're taking the idea, the basic core concept of the original Evil Dead, and they're playing it straight instead of going for laughs. Which I think is a good idea, and it could have been really interesting, but. I'm kind of repeating myself here after Pacific Rim, but they could have done more with it. They could have gone even more psychological and made it even more twisted. But I guess they're thinking that it's the Evil Dead name, and so people are expecting tons of gore and craziness. And I think all the gore effects were sort of at odds with the psychological horror that they were attempting. So it's kind of a mixed bag, but there are some fun moments too, and there are a couple of performances that I like, so... I don't know. I'd say it's really for diehard horror fans only, not really for the mainstream.
All right. All right. And I already put my two cents in. Eric, did you go yet? I can't remember. I'm zoning out here. The heat is getting to me. Did you just go? Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Boy, I am. It is hot around. I know you guys. What's Texas looking like? Because I feel like I'm in Texas these days.
We've had a bunch of rain lately, but it was like, 94 today. It's probably around 87 out right now.
Not bad. Yeah, crappy for a while.
We've actually had a shockingly cool summer. So.
Well, we got all your heat. So
yes.
Yeah. So before I completely pass out and totally lose consciousness, I'm going to skip the cover gallery because I took a peek and there's nothing interesting. So let's move on to our ambush topics. We're making excellent time here. So Eric, why don't you kick us off?
All right. How did I phrase this? Overused songs in movies.
How about movie trailers? Does that count?
Sure, whatever. Movie trailers, TV. We play it fast and loose in the Friday Village.
Okay, all right. Nice. I was trying to remember the name of the song I was thinking of.
Well, I'm going to go with one that always irritates me when I hear it. I like the song, but it's in far too much, is Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen. it gets thrown in – it's been thrown into – I don't even know how many movies, but it's always used for some kind of either it's some kind of revelatory scene or some kind of love scene, and it really irritates the hell out of me.
Nice.
This is a tricky one.
It is a tricky one.
Do you want me to go while you think, or do you want to?
Is YMCA used an awful lot in movies for cheap gags?
I think so. Yeah.
Like,
is it?
Yeah, okay. Especially in the 80s and 90s, it really was.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen that pop up over and over. Maybe in like cheap animated knockoffs where there's animated hamsters dancing. I don't know if that's actually happened, but it feels like it has happened. So
you said a lot more of those movies.
I feel like that's more
than
of like a. Yes. I feel like that's more of a what I like about you.
Oh, that's the one I was trying to think of. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Can I still use that even though you got
yeah, it? Yeah, yeah.
Because that show.
That's what you meant.
Yes, that's what I meant. And that shows up in every trailer. And they always, like, match forced comic beats with yes. Yeah, screw that song, right? Okay.
I'm not familiar with the song, but it's kind of I know it when I hear it. It was first the old lady from The Wedding Singer was rapping the song. And then Kangaroo Jack the Kangaroo was rapping the same song.
Oh, boy.
Sugar Hill Gang.
It's that novelty rap song that like wacky characters who aren't supposed to be rapping always rap to.
Nice. Okay, well, mine, this week on Netflix, I watched Mystery Men for the first time in a long time. And it's a fun movie. You know, maybe it doesn't do as much as it could, but it's a good movie. Except for the use of Smash Mouth's All Star, which is a song I hate.
That's rough.
I don't know. For whatever reason, like, awesome. Smash Mouth just rubs me the wrong way. And that song, I hate.
Yeah, good call. So, nicely done. All right. I'll go next, then, just thinking it's hot. Scenes in movies where it feels really hot. Like, you feel hot and uncomfortable watching the movie. Sweaty and parched.
I'm going to go with Return of the King in Mountain Doom when they're throw the... A
lot of cinder and ash there. Definitely.
A lot of cinder and ash.
Yes.
Good old Chevy Chase in Vacation, walking through the desert after he's separated from his family.
Yes, yes.
What was he singing to himself? I love a parade.
I'm going to go with the final showdown in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Oh, good.
Classic.
Very good. And speaking of mine, you might have to correct me. It's been a while since I've seen it, but another Chevy Chase. In The Three Amigos, wasn't there that sequence?
Yes.
Lost in the desert, and he had so much water, he was, like, rinsing his mouth. And, right?
Yeah.
It was Chevy Chase.
They had sand
at the canteen, and yeah. So.
It's funny. As soon as Max said that, I was like, "Oh yeah, I remember that scene with Green Migos." I won't say anything about it though, just in case that was babes.
That was my choice. But it's probably been far too long since I've seen that movie.
Is
that movie as funny as I remember it when I was?
I think it might be.
You think so? Okay. Hmm. All right.
Okay. Who could be wrong, Internet?
Daryl, go ahead.
All right. Improvised weapons.
Try not to use the lawn implement weapon one we had before. So,
I may have used this before. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I'm gonna go movie UHF when Michael Richards is being held captive and he escapes and he's running away with a staple gun, just firing it over his shoulder.
That's good. Yes, yes.
See the guy's face.
I'm gonna give you two. One real one in Banshee. The first episode, our hero gets into a fight. In fact, the fight leads to him taking on this identity of the sheriff, but he's taking on a hoodlum, and he takes a ketchup bottle, jams it in the guy's mouth, and punches it a couple times, so the ketchup bottle goes down into his throat.
Jeez.
Wow, that's
pretty
rough.
Graphic, actually. It's pretty graphic. So I'll give it, but a more lighthearted improvised weapon would be in the Naked Gun, in the first one when there's a fight in the hospital room and Drebin gets hit the pillow. So I think they do the gag, they ate the gag in the second one where he throws a towel. He gets hit with a towel. But the other, actually, there's that fight in the bathroom where it's all improvised weapons, right? With the and the hair dryer, he hits him with the hair, you know, he turns the hair dryer on, and that is apparently, I don't know. So a lot of Naked Gun.
Yeah, so far.
I'm trying to remember the specifics, but I know at the end of Aliens, when Hicks shows Ripley to use the gun at the end, they actually take duct tape and they tape two guns together. So it's like the machine gun and the grenade launcher. And,
yeah, and that's all Ripley. I think she does that all on her own.
Oh, does she just duct tape it all together?
She does
herself?
It all, yeah, she does it all up.
I was wondering if that would work, if you duct tape two guns together and went out to go fight somebody.
That actually kind of bothers me. Like, when I watch it, it just feels like it wouldn't work, but what do I know?
Yeah, you know.
We need to get Mythbusters on that one.
That we do, yes.
All right, then. I'm going to go with my favorite scene from Harlem Nights. Where Della Reese hits Red Fox in the face with a trash can lid.
Nice.
All right. I think I saw that same gag in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of Mine. Nice. All right, Mac, take us away. We're making excellent time. You guys are going to get me to my Cinemax action very soon. I appreciate it.
Cool. Well, speaking of action, it's been a while since we've done this. It's another round of Batman Versus. We're going to do some fan fiction here. So if Batman were to get into a fight with James Bond, who do you think would win?
Which one? Which James Bond?
I'd pick one.
I'll pick Roger Moore.
Okay.
And I will say that Roger Moore will be he will have his limbs ripped off and he will be beaten to death with them, because I could never buy Roger Moore as a hand-to-hand pugilist, no matter how hard they try to edit things.
Like, he's got lots of cool gadgets.
That's about it, and smirks. But whenever he gets into fights, it's rough. Like, and it's not a stuntman. It's like he's landing blows with the ferocity of one of the three ninjas. You know those kids? So Roger Moore Bond is my choice and would not end well. He would be awash in his own blood very soon.
I'm trying desperately to think of a movie where someone who played James Bond was in a movie with someone who played Batman.
And oh.
So,
wow.
I was like, were Michael Keaton and Sean Connery ever in a movie? Apparently not. So, I don't know. I mean, I gotta go Batman in pretty much every situation. I'm afraid this is a... I can't think of anything that the Q would invent that would outclass Bruce Wayne would invent.
That's true. Like, will the Batmobile take on even the invisible car, which was the height of Q's engine? I think
so. Submarine car.
Or the submarine car, right. You know who's the bridge between the Batman and the James Bond universe is gotta be Kim Basinger, right?
Oh yes.
I suppose so, yeah. At least in fake James Bond movies.
Fake James Bond movies. That might be the best we have.
Really, all Batman would have to do would be to deploy his bat inflatable woman, and James Bond would be so distracted that he could, let's shake him out.
That's right.
All right. Well, I'm going to be the dissenter here, and I'm going to say James Bond wins because Batman has never seen somebody riding down a mountain in a cello case.
Well, you brought out you brought Timothy Dalton to the table, and I can't disagree with you, because T. Dalton just delivers, right?
He'd be so, and Batman would be so gobsmacked by that he'd just...
Yeah. And the other thing, the other thing is, I'll tell you what this, Batman is bound by his will not take a life code, right? Timothy Dalton kills with wanton glee.
Yeah, he was rogue agent. Yeah.
He is the rogue agent. He feeds security guards to maggots. That's what he does. He will end you. Timothy Dalton will end you. Now, unfortunately, I'm trying to think of a Batman actor who's been in a movie with a James Bond actor desperately trying to figure
out. I know, right? It's tough. Was Val Kilmer ever in a movie
Telly Savalas ever appear on the TV show?
I mean, we're talking about an actor who played James Bond appearing in something with an actor who played Batman, correct? That's what we're striving for.
Trying to think if Telly Savalas ever appeared with Adam West in the old show.
Or Christopher Lee.
Well, Telly Savalas wasn't James Bond.
No, well, like an actor who played Basinger's not
an
James,
actual James Bond.
I know. That's
an actual James Bond?
Like the actual James Bond actor.
So like, did George Lazenby ever appear in a movie with George Clooney? I don't know.
It has to be a Kentucky Fried movie, so I don't know. Maybe George Clooney.
Maybe.
Clooney was in so many 80s shows and sitcoms. It's possible.
They probably crossed paths on Golden Girls.
That's right. George Lazenby was the commander at the time.
For the record, Estelle Getty could take them both.
That's true.
actually, Lazenby was the one that I went to. Because I was thinking about it, and, Batman's got a cool car, James Bond has cool cars, Batman has gadgets, Bond has gadgets, Batman has vast resources, Bond has vast resources. But the one thing Bond has that Batman does not have is George Lazenby's sex kilt.
That's true. The sex kilt is fearsome. So, I don't know.
The sex kilt would never work.
What's more distracting? Utility belt? A man in a cello case going down a ski hill or a sex kilt? That's the question.
They can only combine those two scenes somehow.
Oh, good Lord, help us all. Do we need? I don't think we need George Lazenby spread eagle than a cello case with a sex children.
All right, and just for the record, George Lazenby is the voice of Mr. Walker in the Batman Beyond TV series.
Wow.
Ooh. Three episodes.
That might be it. That might be the closest we have.
In that case, I think he wins because he's real and Batman's animated.
I think so.
All he has to do is crumple up the paper and he wins.
He does. He shreds the cells and he wins. Yes. Congratulations, George Lazenby. You win yet again. So, okay, well, that's it. Great way to end it. We kept it nice and tight. An excellent Friday filibuster, I have to say. I didn't lose consciousness. I think win-win everywhere. So thanks for tuning in. Hope you have a good, cool weekend. And, Mac, take us away.
We're gonna get you. We're gonna get you.